Adventure and new friends are what awaits you in Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek fan club. Starfleet, the International Star Trek Fan Association, is celebrating its 45th anniversary, and with over 4,000 members in 75 countries, it offers camaraderie, educational and philanthropy opportunities, and a unique membership experience modeled on the Starfleet organization from the TV shows and movies. To start your adventure today, visit www.sfi.org.
Greetings, my fellow Starfleet officers. It is I, Mike the Birdman Dub, but I'm not alone as we continue this trek, this animated trek with Future Imperfect. I'm joined by my very own helmsman,
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And this is the show that could not be recorded, simply because we were supposed to get this out originally in February, but, you know, with Steve having a kid and school, and honestly just got really busy with my MTV thing right towards the end of the month, it happens now. So happy Thursday! Yes, we are back here on Future Imperfect, brought to you by the wonderful folks over at SFI.org, Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club. As of this recording, I think it's the Region 2 Summit just wrapped down in Alabama, so hopefully you guys all had a great time. I've been following it on Facebook via our Starfleet leader, Dave Blazer. I always love reading his Facebook status. He always has the shittiest days beginning right first thing in the morning. So it's always fun to read about how his day's likely going to end up. But since it has been probably about 3 weeks since we last did a show, Steve, what have you been up to?
Getting ready for various events on KeepCastRadio.com. Been doing the whole college thing, which I started in January. It's actually, I really like it. I'm going for media and entertainment, technology stuff. So I'm learning quite a bit in the art of editing. So that's been a great thing. Also, got a new job offer, but I'm not sure about yet, which I talked to you off air, but, and going to be going to a couple cons this year.
Now, is this your first time at college?
Technically, I went after graduating high school and I was clearly not ready to go, and I bailed after a month. So this is actually my return trip and I'm kicking everyone's ass and taking names.
Well, good, good, good. I mean, that's something that I know podcasting definitely gives you a bit of an edge, especially since you've had your kind of feet wet in the pool, so to speak, for a little bit of time. So that's awesome, man. I myself have been more or less just kind of doing my own thing, just kind of hanging out, trying to think things of note. I will not be going to PAX East this year, unfortunately, due to health reasons. Just I've got problems with my back and knees, and I may have to look at a surgical option, depending, which really sucks. I've rediscovered my love for vintage toys over the last couple of weeks. I got the coolest thing I've gotten recently is I got a mint in the box Castle Grayskull for a retarded price. Let's just say I love stupid people. And then tonight I found an equally dumb person and scored myself this huge lot of Transformers. Now, a lot of them aren't complete. I am going to have to pay a little bit to, repair them, like just, you know, getting, you know, fists, guns or whatever. But, I'm really looking forward to getting these. So hopefully they'll be in the mail later on this week. And, trying to think, what else have I gotten that's really neat in the last little bit? That's pretty much about it. So I guess let's kind of talk about what we're going to be talking about today. Today's Future Imperfect is going to, we're going to go back to Star Trek, this time around. And we're going to talk about the not often mentioned Star Trek animated series. I mean, it's something you've probably heard of, but something you don't know a whole shit ton about. Which is mainly the reason why I wanted to do this, because I used to watch this on Nickelodeon when it aired in the afternoons when I was a kid. But we're going to save all that conversation for afterwards. But here is Steve and the Elkars Computer Network to tell us about Star Trek, the animated series.
This computer terminal provides full access to the Elkars Computer Net. It can be operated both by voice and keypad commands.
Initiating update.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Elcars. This week on Elcars, we're featuring Star Trek, the animated series. Little bit of background history on the show is, it was formerly entitled Star Trek and the Animated Adventures of Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek. Was a continuation of sorts of the Voyages of the USS Enterprise previously featured in the original Star Trek series. The show, as it is now, it was originally on NBC for 22 episodes of the animated series, airing between September 1973 and October 1974. They continued to do reruns through 1975. The series was produced by Filmation, which, if you don't know about them, they've done Fat Albert, they've done He-Man, She-Ra, all of those type shows, the Filmation Ghostbusters. So that's a little bit of history on Filmation. The series was written by Star Trek writers and professional sci-fi writers Larry Niven, DC Fontana, David Gerold, and Samuel A. Peoples. Some of the stories were as follows: sequels to original animated episodes of the original series, such as More Tribbles, More Tribbles, which was a follow-up of The Trouble with Tribbles, Once Upon a Planet, a sequel to Shore Leave, and Mudd's Passion, the follow-up to Mudd's Women and I, Mudd. The series comprised of all of the original cast, with the exception of Ensign Chekov. Due to budgetary costs, they had to cut him out, so he ended up actually writing an episode of the show. This series actually features Dr. McCoy as a full commander and Nurse Chapel as a full lieutenant. New characters such as Eryx and Emras are also featured in the show, voiced by Jimmy Doohan and Majel Barrett, respectively. The show was primarily comprised of the six core Star Trek actors. Nearly all aliens and guest characters were voiced by James Doohan, Nichelle Nichols, and Majel Barrett. Although some actors reprised their roles from the original series, Leonard Nimoy is the only actor to voice his character in every single episode of the animated series. Although the series gets a lot of flack in its various incarnation of however you may interpret this, whether you don't believe it's part of canon, whether you do believe it's part of canon, or whether you wish that it burned in a fire or it's non-existent, or you simply love it. Everyone has a different opinion of the animated series. It is said, though, that this series does take place in the last 2 years of the Enterprise's five-year mission by DC Fontana. But StarTrek.com considers the seasons collectively to represent the fifth and final year of the mission. So that's it from me, and back to the show.
Please confirm deactivation request. Deactivation complete. Now disconnected from this terminal.
Welcome back to Future Imperfect. Thank you, Steve, for consulting the Elcars computer system on this, well, I don't quite know how to quantify this series. I don't know whether I hated it, enjoyed it, or somewhere in the middle. Let's start with you. What did you think?
Not to slam it, because I do love the fact that they attempted to continue it the best way they knew how, which was with an animated series. And like every other show in the 60s or 70s, they had to have an animated series of it, whether it be Batman or Super Friends or Star Trek. And although the show is severely dated as far as the characters and the backgrounds are concerned, some of the ship views or the planet views from space looked halfway decent for the time. But I'm really glad that they actually had all of the cast reprise their roles,
with the exception of Walter Koenig, which was honestly very, very surprising to me. Now, from what I heard, since at the end of this recording, I haven't heard Steve's Elcar, so I'm going to break the illusion of radio here. I heard when they wanted the principal cast to come back for this, they were going to find sound-alikes for some of the other characters. And Leonard Nimoy says, unless you hire Nichelle Nichols and Sulu, I'm not coming back. And they're like, shit. So they hired everyone back, but the one they couldn't afford, just because it wasn't in the budget, was Walter Koenig and Chekov, and they replaced him with don't even know how to describe this thing. Because that's what it is. It is a thing to me.
I know what you're talking about, too.
It's the weird three-legged guy. Thanax, I think his name was, or something like that. I don't remember. And yeah, I watched the first 13 or 14 episodes. I'm pretty sure he spoke once. Maybe.
I can definitely agree with you there. I don't think he spoke very much, if at all.
I think I heard him say, "Yes, Captain," in like the first or like second episode of the series, and that was about it. And then the other thing that I remember.
You were saying Eric's, right?
Yeah, Eric's. Yeah, yeah.
He was voiced by Scotty.
That was James Doohan?
Yes.
Well, holy dog shit.
Yep. And then the other character that showed up was Emress, which was the cat lady.
Hated her voice.
That was Majel Barrett.
Oh my god. Every time she talked, she had to put in this. Okay, she talked normal for a line. Talk and then get this stupid purr sound. It sounded so bad.
It was typical of Filmation, though.
Yeah, and that's something that I think the series. Some people may say, "Oh, this series sucks." No, you pretty much just summed it up right there. It's Filmation, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Filmation, for those of our listeners that don't necessarily know, this is the same animation house and company that produced He-Man, Masters of the Universe. They did Ghostbusters first, which is why the 1984 version was called The Real Ghostbusters. And I know they did a bunch of other shows as well during the time, and they all had a very unique look to them, and that is, some of the character animations would look really, really good, and some of the backgrounds would look really, really friggin' terrible. Or it would be vice versa. It was never totally consistent. So this series, I don't know. I mean, because Star Trek, a lot of people wanted the series to come back, which is why we got this. And I saw this series probably in 1993... or 92, and the reason I remember this is my family used to have this giant-ass satellite dish in my backyard, the kind that you swear to God would pick up alien signals, and I remember watching this on Sunday afternoons on Nickelodeon, because they would show all these really weird older TV shows. I remember seeing this, Mr. Wizard, The World of David the Gnome, which has a wonderfully depressing ending. You should watch it sometime. Okay, seriously, what happens at the end of David the Gnome? He's like, "Well, it's my 100th birthday, time to die." And he literally is like, I'm literally paraphrasing it, but he tells his best friend, this fox, "Well, I gotta go up the mountain, fuck off, I'm gonna go die now." And that's pretty much what happens. It's so depressing.
That's dumb.
It's pretty ballsy for a kid's cartoon. And that's something else that I liked about this cartoon, is that it was kind of ballsy. The fact that I don't think it truly treated its audience as stupid as a lot of people may have thought. Now, there were some dumb episodes. Let's get that out of the way first. Namely, Giant Spock.
There was an
episode, and they tried to involve the kind of space seed storyline with, like, Khan. These were the genetic super people. And they would clone people and implant the memories into somebody else. And they decided Spock was the perfect person for them to clone. And they're like, "Okay, now that we've cloned him, this is Spock 2. And they transferred his mind into him. And then the giant Spock touched the little Spock, and they transferred minds again. And it was just really friggin' weird. But the episode that I really liked, it was very, very early on, like episode 3 or 4. And it was something like they went through Spock's past, and suddenly the new future was different. There was like a transporter thing, and Spock was replaced by this Andorian guy. Captain Kirk remembered who Spock was, but nobody else would. So Spock had to go back through time to his time on Vulcan, and he had to go and correct him dying during the Vulcan trials. And you get to see Spock's giant saber-tooth cat pet, Icha. That actually mentions, and that you actually meet Sarek. So it's weird. It's almost like Star Trek Animated established a lot of really cool canon, because they've mentioned Icha in other forms of media. I'm pretty sure I'm getting his name right. They've talked about Sarek, and they've talked,
yes.
And there's also the Vulcan city you see during one of the episodes during the series is actually, they make homage to it in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, when they land on Vulcan in the Klingon Bird of Prey. So there are some things you didn't know. But overall, the series, I don't know, like, I enjoyed the fact that they brought back all the original voice cast. And one of the things that I did notice, and you see this in the pilot episode, where they go deal with basically what I would call Star Trek V, the animated version, because they more or less find this god at the center of the galaxy. And if you know astronomy at all, you don't go to centers of galaxies. Normally they're quasars or giant black holes, places you don't want to be. And yet, they just go hang out. And there's like this living ship there, this consciousness.
It's almost like V'ger.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. So I kind of wonder if that's where they kind of got some inspiration for it. And they go and get the ship and they try and take over the Enterprise. And the Enterprise leaves him trapped on this other thing because they're going to destroy it. And he's like, don't leave me alone. And it was actually kind of sad, I thought, because the series, it didn't discriminate. Like, when someone died, they said they are dead, not they're destroyed or whatever. So that's something else that I kind of noticed. And there was another episode where they reference a guy who went out on this exploratory mission and his ship crashed. And unfortunately, he died, but the shape-shifting creature had taken his memories. And he was trying to tell this guy's girlfriend when he was alive, stay away from me, just, we're done. Break up, don't talk to me anymore. And he was actually doing it to protect her. And the creature shows her his true face, which is like this squid thing. And she's like, I could learn to love you. And that's something that I really liked about the animated series. Like I said, it didn't treat its audience totally stupid until you get to Giant Spock. So what are some of your thoughts on it, Steve?
Well, I mean, yeah, they weren't afraid to push the envelope to some degree just for the fact that, you know, they could actually animate some of this and not have to deal with makeup or costumes or any of that stuff. They could just, it was as far as the artist was concerned. I also like the fact that they had the Klingons in it. They revisited back to Harcourt Mudd.
See, that now that is something.
Or Harry Mudd, that's
yeah,
what
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, Harry Mudd.
And then they have, also they have Cyrano Jones back in it as well.
Which is the Tribble guy, right?
Yes, the Tribble guy.
That episode was actually a lot of fun. I like the fact that they made this weird hunter creature which squats on top of Tribbles and eats it with its vagina or asshole.
It's called a glommer.
A glommer, and then it gets on part of the like Klingon ship. And then it just, I'd say that's probably my favorite episode of what I saw of this series. Now, one of the things that I did like, also once again talking about my other favorite episode, the time travel one, they use the Guardian of Forever. That actually really impressed me about that, the fact that they would do this. Now, there actually were episodes of the show that were written by guys who actually wrote the original kind of Star Trek. And I think Walter Koenig actually wrote one, too.
Yeah, he did.
But I don't think I saw that one.
It was the... I'm trying to think of the name. The Infinite Vulcan.
What happens in that one? Because that's one that I missed.
That's the one where Spock dies, I think.
Really? Oh, you see...
Maybe. No. No, it was the plague.
Yep, that one I completely missed. But I'm trying to think what else was I really going to mention about this. I guess. Well, you had mentioned. I don't know if we said this on air or like off air. How would this series survive today? Kind of looking at it. I mean, I like the fact that Trek continued, and this would be the last Trek you'd get on TV before Star Trek The Next Generation. I mean, you'd get the movie in 1980, was it?
For yeah, the first it one? Was around that. I think it was 79.
Yeah, so there was a good at least 6 to 7 year gap when this was the only game in town outside of the reruns, and Phase 2 would become TNG more or less. But not a lot of people talk about this because supposedly, from what I've read, is that this is no longer considered canon pieces of this because it was decanonized when it got signed over to someone, which I can't say I'm entirely surprised. One of the things that I didn't like about this, and I guess I can see why they did it from a budget standpoint, is they had the life belts. And the life belts were basically their versions of spacesuits. So they could walk around literally with no gravity, no atmosphere or anything, as long as they wore these belts. So that would save them animating environment suits every single episode.
That's kind of asinine, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can see
I kind of like the concept, because it could be like an invisible force field around them.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense from a money standpoint.
Definitely see that.
But the fact that they don't have this technology in TNG, but once again, because it was decanonized, you know. Another thing that I noticed with this is, I mean, let's talk about the animation about the show itself. The Enterprise looks great when it comes in swooping in against planets. Some of the space battles look a little cheesy, but when it's just the Enterprise, or if it's doing something like, say, talking about the episode that had the Tribbles. They're hauling these boats of grain to send to like some Klingon colony or something, and
the Enterprise looks really good. It looks almost like it came from the animated series.
Yeah, I mean, it looks phenomenal, and that's something that I think the series deserves a fair chunk of recognition for, is its animation. When it was great, it was great. When it was bad, it was fucking bad. And what I mean by that is, I remember one episode where it was McCoy talking to Spock and Kirk, and the background behind McCoy just randomly changes. It's almost like they forgot what scene they were animating and just went, oh, fuck it, and just kept going. So that's something that I didn't much care for. That and the characters themselves, if they weren't saying anything, if they're in a moment of contemplation and they weren't moving, they looked great. When this series could not animate faces to save its life. I mean, everybody looks like they're trying to take a poop. That's the best way to describe it.
It's so true.
It's just, I don't know, there's just no expression in the faces. But I guess this was very early Filmation. I mean, things would get better with He-Man and Ghostbusters. I honestly think the height of Filmation stuff was the real Ghostbusters. So look how well that series moved in terms of background, atmosphere, and just plain colors. But looking at the Star Trek the Animated Series, I can see why it's probably a piece of forgotten history that not a lot of people, like I said, not a lot of Trekkies that, or at least that I know, talk about it. Now, I know there was a 4-disc DVD set released a couple years ago, because this series is only 22 episodes long, and it only lasted for like a year on CBS back in the day. Back when CBS used to have a cartoon block. And I can't think of anywhere right now that's broadcasting it outside of Netflix. I remember they used to show it the odd time on the Sci-Fi Channel. I think I saw it on the Space Channel up here in Canada for maybe a couple months, but even then I'm not 100% sure of that.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing it on the Sci-Fi Channel years ago, but the most, and I think my first run at this was around the time I first got internet. I found some website because I was looking up Star Trek and, you know, all kinds of other stuff I could get my hands on online, and I remember finding this and going, what the hell is this? Just because I saw images of it online somewhere on some GeoCities site.
I forgot about it until probably I was in college, and there was one of the guys in one of my production classes, a real meathead of a guy. Like, we used to call him Mr. NASCAR, so hopefully he's not listening. And randomly I found out he was a Trekkie, and he started talking to me about the animated series, of all things. And I kept thinking, wow, first off, you fucking weirdo, and second of all, there was an animated series, and I didn't remember that during the 90s I used to watch this. And I don't know, it's got kind of a charm to it. I mean, if anything, you can say the voice acting, at least from the main cast, is fantastic. Although they never ever did record at the same time in the same place, because, well, William Shatner would travel a lot. So he'd record his sessions in whatever city he happened to be in at the time and send them in. But I would actually say its tone was fairly consistent throughout the series. I mean, there were no over the top performances from anybody who wasn't, or sorry, from anybody who was in the main cast. And that's something that I think that should be kind of noted. I also really enjoyed the music to this series as well, though I don't know who the series composer is right off the top of my head.
It was Yvette Blias and Jeff Michaels.
Now, what other works did they perhaps work on? Anything that maybe we might know? I mean, I'm pretty sure the one guy went
I think they worked on a lot of the other Filmation stuff.
Yeah, because one of them I'm pretty sure does stuff for He-Man.
I think they both did He-Man, and I think they both did, like, the Cosby Kids.
I forgot did the Cosby Kids.
Yes, that was another Filmation travesty. The New Adventures of Superman. Spider-Man cartoon series.
Now, was the 60s. That the one... Really, Filmation did the early Spider-Man one?
Yeah, it appears so. I think they did. Wow. Yeah, the Brady Kids, My Favorite Martian, Shazam, Fat Albert, Ghostbusters. There was a Brady
Kids cartoon?
Mighty Mouse, Tom and Jerry, early stuff.
Wow. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on the Brady Kids.
Yes.
Wow, man. Filmation really did everything, didn't they?
Yeah, I think that they were the go-to animation company of that time. Now, before some other ones stepped up and said, hey, look, our art's better.
Yeah, I mean, not to take away from what they did, but Filmation, I don't know. I mean, it's a company I'm only really starting to learn about now because I've got the new Masters of the Universe set from Mill Creek, and there's a bunch of documentaries on there. I mean, this thing closed back in 1989, so it died right at the end of the really good era of animation. I mean, I guess all things considered, at least it went out on a high note when animation was mostly meant to sell toys, but I think the 80s had held a special part in this. Now, let's kind of talk about that for just a couple minutes, Steve. If the series was done in the 80s, do you think it would have been what company would you like to have seen maybe do it? I would like to have seen maybe the Marvel Studios people do it.
I could kind of see that. It would have been interesting to say the least because, but at the same time, Marvel around that time had the Star Wars saga. So DC would have had Star Trek.
Now, do you think it would have maybe held up, though? I mean, because there was the Superpowers cartoon or like the...
Yeah, they had Justice the Super Friends. They had, you know, the many different names for it. Justice, you know, Friends and all that kind of stuff. But they... it could have held up, but again, in the 80s, not a lot of the animated stuff held up. Now, if it were made towards the end of the 80s, or, you know, the mid to late 80s, or, you know, I could see it being done very well. You know, maybe Sunbow doing it, maybe I wouldn't throw it towards Deke, even though I like some of the stuff they've done. I don't, I would not want to see them do it. But yeah, I mean, I could see like some of those studios handling it.
See, I think if this had happened during the 80s, I think the series would have only had life until about 1987 or 86. And you might be asking, well, why? Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, that would have definitely killed it.
Now, do you think they would have ever done something like do Star Trek The Animated Series with the TNG crew? Can you honestly picture an animated Captain Picard?
No.
And I think that's the thing. Star Trek, the original, the 1960s one, I think this is the only one that would really translate well to animation.
I think it's because it's from a simpler time and a simpler design. Mm-hmm. So I think that it would translate more evenly with animation than some of the later series, only for the fact that it gets a lot more complicated in design later on.
Well, one of the things that I think they could have gotten away with, because you saw how many exotic aliens and locations they visited during the animated series run, is that they could have had a lot more fun to open up the kind of universe with that. I mean, I'd like to see an animated Star Trek series today, because if you look at the advances in CG animation, you could, and especially with the new rebooted James, with the rebooted J.J. Abrams films, you could do so much, and you could even hire soundalikes to do the roles. I mean, hell, I'm pretty sure Zachary Quinto is not doing much right now. He could probably even still voice it. He could even be the main narrator for the show, or you could hire Leonard Nimoy to say, these are not my memories, but I now have them, or something.
Or, I could definitely see that. I honestly, if this were to be made today, I think I'd like to see Nickelodeon make it.
I think they've been pretty respectful of the stuff that they've handled. I mean, I remember I was really skeptical of their new Ninja Turtles. Yeah, and now it's probably one of the best pieces of animation on TV right now.
Oh, hands down, I have to agree with you. Other than maybe the Hub, which handles the Transformers Prime and stuff like that. That's the only other studio I could see possibly doing it. But again, it would have to be in a 3D, you know, CGI kind of standard.
The one network or studio I would like to keep away from this with, you know,
Cartoon Network?
Yes, because they cancel everything when it gets really good.
Young Justice, Green Lantern, the animated series.
Clone Wars, that just got
They killed the new Thundercats.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, everybody says right now 80s nostalgia is coming back, and yeah, it's very true, but the people that are in the boardrooms don't necessarily get it because they're not us. Now, that being said, we as geeks maybe don't understand how the business side of it works, because I remember there was an article I read on Bleeding Cool recently talking about what happened with Young Justice and the Green Lantern animated series. It's because of merchandise sales. Things didn't continue. Now, I'm pretty sure there were toys based upon the Star Trek animated series, because I'm pretty sure I saw them on like Toy Hunter, which you can see on the Travel Channel. Which I kind of wish we talked about this guy when we did our toy episode, because I think this guy rips people off something fierce. But that's a different show for a different day. So I kind of wonder how it would succeed, because I think you'd have to position it like the Clone Wars. We'd have to show it in prime time. I don't think Star Trek would survive on a Saturday morning, especially because of the group of people that we are that would watch it. I mean, your average 30-something, let's just say, is more apt to watch something at night as opposed to, you know, get up on a Saturday morning. But then again, that's an over generalization. So, I don't know. I'm trying to think of another network that could maybe handle it. I would say Sci-Fi, but they're so far off the mark now.
Well, they aren't even Sci-Fi. They're like, they're totally, like, they're WWE and all this other weird indie sci-fi crap. And I do mean crap.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to the good sci-fi channel that existed pre-1997?
The one that played Mystery Science Theater and Transformers and all kinds of other good sci-fi stuff.
Captain Power, I remember being on there. You know what? I actually thank Sci-Fi Channel for showing me my first anime at 2 o'clock in the morning completely by accident. That's where I first saw Akira. Didn't know what the hell it was. And I saw that and Vampire Hunter D and Lensman. All three in a row in one night.
Huh.
That night was awesome. But, I mean, Star Trek Animated, I think its legacy is going to be that it's probably the show that kept Star Trek alive. At least in terms of the pop culture. I mean, yeah, there are always reruns, but those reruns don't necessarily always bring in the new fans. So you have to think of the animated series as something to bring in the young people to get kids interested. And these kids likely went on to go see, well, admittedly, the very disappointing Star Trek One when it came out in like theaters. So,
well, and that's probably where the honeycomb, you know, V'ger looking thing came from. in that film. And then also another little fun fact I discovered while doing some research for this show. They have a room. It's called the Rec Room. And they have a console that they can turn on, and it's the holodeck.
Oh, yeah, that's right. This kind of did have a lot of the precursor tech. And and that's something that couldn't necessarily be shown on the original run of the show because they didn't have the budget, or they simply just didn't think of it. So animation does open up a lot of possibilities for you to really let the mind run. Admittedly, like I said, it was on a Filmation budget, but I think with what they did make, it has its charm. In a way. Is this a series I'd watch again?
Probably not.
Probably not. But I'm glad that I'm going to finish it out. Like I said, I only have another 10 episodes to go. I mean, for 22 episodes, I find this is the kind of show you can watch a couple in a row and then you have to stop or you're going to get sick of it.
Yeah, I tried to power through. And I think that's part of why I got burnout a little bit with it.
Yeah, it's not something you can marathon. This is not something you're going to sit down and say, honey, let's watch Star Trek together, because you will turn them off of the series almost immediately, I think. But like I said, if you have a little bit of a background in Trek, it's a nice, it's something different. It's like, I'm trying to describe this, Steve. It'd be like, everybody has that one friend in college where they're like, here, try this. Be it a different food, be it a different drink at the bar, or even something that we can't talk about on air, and they talk you into it somehow. And then leave you alone in a room, locked in, and then they keep telling all your friends, and they pass around on the internet. Not like this has ever happened to me. Guess what I'm talking about? Win 10 bucks. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where you're glad you tried once, but it's not something I'm sure you'd care to repeat again. That being said, if you have Netflix, you have no reason not to try out at least a few episodes. It doesn't cost you anything, really, because you have your Netflix membership, presumably, for something else. But I don't know if I'd go so far as to track down the DVDs. Now, if they ever did a Star Trek The Complete Franchise, like I'm talking every movie, every TV series, every special, every documentary in one box set, sure, that would be worth a pickup. Probably around $2,000 when you really break it down, but it would be something you could probably... If it's included, yeah, but if they re-release it, I don't see this getting the Blu-ray treatment, to be honest with you.
No, really it's don't. Definitely not up to par to actually get that.
But I will say this, just before we kind of close this out, the quality of the transfer on Netflix is surprisingly clean. Like, seriously, go back and watch a couple of the episodes. Like I said, it's only going to take 22 minutes of your time, if that. And just look how bright everything is.
Oh, I know. It's pretty flawless as far as color on Netflix. Usually you would expect in a translation to have some kind of a graininess in it or something that kind of draws you away from it, from paying attention to the story of it.
Yeah, it's like somebody had kept the master copies of this in really good shape. So I kind of wonder if the Okudas had cleaned this up for the DVD release a couple years ago. So I don't know. That being said, I kind of wondered, like, now that's just me talking straight out of my like butthole, but I wonder if it will get a Blu-ray release in like a year or two, because that transfer on Netflix is way too clean to just be, oh, we had the master tapes. Because you look at the conversion for a program like, say, Transformers, and look how flawed that one is. But then again, it's not to say maybe the tapes were kept worse. And we're looking at a generation 2 or 3 copy of it. Because you look at between the Hasbro DVDs, or sorry, not Hasbro, the Shout Factory DVDs and the Rhino DVDs from earlier in the decade. And they look like shit compared to these ones. But even they had certain elements that the Shout Factory ones didn't have. So, I don't know. Who's to say? So, I guess that kind of wraps it up for this month's edition of Future Imperfect. We will be back next month. What do we want to talk about, Steve? We should talk about something more positive here on the show. Maybe, what do you want to talk about?
How about some of the side stories from the novels?
Okay, I think we can do that. I've definitely read a couple of them, and we'll see how they fit in terms of canon, or you'll find out what a Mary Sue is
by the time. They use those a lot.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. So we'll tell you about some of those on the next show of Future Imperfect. Once again, brought to you by SFI.org, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club. And we would love to get you guys involved. If there's anybody out there who is a huge Star Trek novel fan, please get in contact with us. We'd love to have you on the show. So email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net, subject line Star Trek, and we'll get in touch with you to see if we can make something happen. We'll make you famous for 45 minutes. But anyway, guys, like I said, big thanks to everybody. And, well, Steve, for this month's Future Imperfect, we have been...
Steve Megatron Phillips.
And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live long and prosper.